today, my first guest here at the Forbidden Knowledge Conference is Hamish Miller. Hamish, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Now That's Weird is a programme that talks about all things strange, and it's certainly a strange thing when some of the things that you've been showing us today with these diagrams. Now, a lot of people talk about sacred geometry, they talk about crop circles, they talk about earth energies. Your work seems to be bringing all those things together. Tell us a little bit, sort of briefly, about how you got into this work.
Oh, it's very difficult to be brief on this, but I did die and have an out-of-body experience in 1982, and it was a wonderful experience, and I came back with a completely altered sense of values, and I came back completely without fear and with every sense just a little bit more tuned in than it had been before. You know, when I came out of hospital and tried to walk and I found I could only go about 50 yards and I put my hand on the top of the wall, I was so aware of the texture of the wall, the difference of brick and concrete, and I was aware of the composition of the flowers and the way the flowers smelt that I had never ever been before, and sounds, and all my five senses were completely tuned up.
Mm. Now, when you're dowsing, you were talking in the talk that you've done downstairs this morning. Let me just explain to people that, as you're the first interviewee, if you like, for the show, it's a big concert hall downstairs, and each speaker is on stage discussing their particular subject. And one by one, we're going to get them up to talk today on the radio.
Yes.
Now, Hamish, when you got up on stage and started talking, you were using a dowsing rod on stage. Do you find that because of those senses being tuned the way they are, that you actually don't need the dowsing rod anymore? You could douse with your hands and actually feel the energy?
Yeah, I can feel the energy, and I can douse with my hands, but nobody's going to be convinced if I stick my hand out and wiggle my fingers. Mm-hmm. I use the rod. Actually, I need it because most of my work is done outside. And if it's windy or it's raining or something like that, you're not so sensitive with the fingers as you are with a big dowsing rod. It's just a tool to accentuate whatever you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Now, your trip has taken you all the way from Cornwall across to New Zealand. And yes, as you say, it took you 10 years to do this.
Yeah.
Now, what, first of all, made you take this trip?
Well, one of the main things was the realisation that the earth energy is, the manifestations in earth energy are responding to human consciousness. And that became obvious after a few years. Now, I'm 79 now, and I haven't got another 10 years to go around the world.
I must say,
you
don't look it, Hamish.
I don't feel it either. But I haven't got another 10 years, and I had to find the place in the world where the energy moved fastest, if you like, or appeared to move faster. And having tried South Africa and South America and Australia, in fact, New Zealand was the place where things were happening all the time and constantly changing, and that was the fascination, actually, to pull me to New Zealand. Apart from the fact it's the most beautiful country, and the people are wonderful.
Well, you actually drew Table Mountain as one of the examples as well,
yes,
something
yes.
that I've also worked with.
Yes.
And certainly the energies, the manifestations that you were showing were geometric shapes.
Yes.
Now, how did you come about that conclusion?
Well, they're the shapes that the rod shows that happen at these points. It's a point of interference on a Fibonacci spiral. And the mathematics of the spiral was done by Bernoulli, you know, 300 years ago. And he said that he thought the Fibonacci spiral was magical. And it's when you artificially induce an energy spiral and then put an interference pattern on it, you get manifestations like these petals and the landscapes. So I'm not completely off the wall. I mean, physicists are proving that these things are happening, but it's going beyond that now, of course. It's going beyond the sort of simple petal thing. It's now becoming very complex.
Yeah, some of the shapes you were showing there, you describe as dog bone, five-pointed star, pentagram. Now, a lot of these things are what's seen in general crop circles. Now, what do you think the connection is?
Well, there is a cosmic connection somewhere. I mean, these energy manifestations, I think, are completely universal. And they are normal. The serpent culture, the ancient Vedic serpent culture, was not about worshipping cobras or serpents. It was about recognizing that this spiraling energy is the whole building block of the universe, and our connection with the cosmos is through this strange energy. And the cobra was only the physical manifestation of this on Earth, but their understanding was way beyond serpent worship. We thought it were worshipping. I can't say it now. Worshipping servants.
You have been standing up on stage for an hour. I'd be out of breath by now, I think. Now, one of the things that I've got a book coming out in September, and in it I make the claim that ley lines and energy lines are completely different. They're not the same things. I can lay down a ley line and I can pick it back up again. You can't do that with an energy line.
No.
Now, what do you think ley lines are in comparison to energy lines? What's your own thoughts?
Well, to me, it's the ley line, the straight alignment, is an indication that there is something important happening underneath it. Mm. So you have a ley line, but you have another couple of energy lines flowing around it. Mm. And it's I suppose, a way of communicating that, look, there is something happening here, that the Earth does have its energy centres like we have, and that it's alive, and it is a consciousness as well. Mm. And, you know, we're at the stage now where we are in a dangerous stage, actually, because our activity is going to destroy it. And it's conscious of that, desperate to communicate. It doesn't want to wipe us out, but it could, you know, in 10 seconds flat, we could be wiped out. And in fact, it would just shake itself and say, that species went wrong, I'm sorry. You know, I couldn't let it be a skin cancer anymore. So it is possible that there is a cosmic intent to try and get through to us, that we've got to start caring for each other and the planet, and not just the planet, that's local. The cosmos we're part of the cosmos. Mm. We can't live in isolation.
And there are healers now that are coming out to actually heal the planet. Yeah. One in particular is Shabdan. I don't know if you've come across him. He's at the Quest conference in Newton Abbott's next weekend.
Yes.
And Shabdan's been a guest on the programme recently. He's doing a big project which we're broadcasting live from Quest to try to heal the river of consciousness, which is infected badly at the moment. Now, a lot of these things sort of come together. When people find their spirituality and their particular path, we start to find certain things that come up all the time. The Knights Templars, the crop circles, the energy lines.
Yes.
I've certainly been drawn into that. Now, I've just relocated to a small village in Somerset from Devon. And it turns out that it was founded by a Knights Templar, allegedly, certainly one of the Sinclair family. Two ley lines cross in the centre.
Yeah.
And the oldest living thing in Britain, an old yew tree, which is 3,000 years old, is actually the centre of the village.
Yes.
Now, I think that it was no coincidence that I was moved to that village.
I'm sure.
To be there for a reason. But why do you think all these things are coming together now?
Well, I think the Earth is actually conscious that unless it moves in a hurry, it hasn't got a chance to reverse the process that we are perpetuating at the moment. Mm. I mean, let's face it, the whole system has been ruled by the oil companies. I'm not into that sort of thing too much, but the decisions are being made by people with money who buy and sell politicians, so that the real decisions about the right way to live are being stepped, if you like.
Yeah, this is part of David Icke's work at the moment, isn't it? That there are certain controlling families now
that
are buying politicians, buying the world, and controlling everything we do.
Yeah.
So I think that's right.
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you can think about the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve not having any shareholders and not producing accounts.
Yeah.
And we pay lip service to these guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, something not right there, isn't it? Yeah. The other interesting thing I picked up on in your speech this morning was about the Armageddon.
Yes.
The good versus evil battle has already happened. It's been and it's gone.
Yes.
Just explain to my listeners a little bit about that theory.
Well, it's just my own theory that you can't have a place which represents the ultimate destruction of people with such a peaceful balance of energy. And I think there was a time when the potential was there. In fact, the potential is still there to a certain extent. But there are more and more people who are talking to try and get the things together. I think that there is a vested interest. I hate this business of going back into money again, but there's a vested interest in keeping people in fear, because we all live in fear. We live in fear of not having enough money, or having money and losing it, and fear of authority, and fear of this and fear of that. And while we are being fed soaps and football, if you like, and enough beer in a weekend, the real questions of where we're going and what we're doing with our species are being pushed further and further away. And we think we're well off at the moment. And it's an absolute disaster situation.
Well, it's interesting what you said the ancestors had said to you and shown you, in that we are becoming too dependent on money. The wrong things are important to us now. Yeah. And I think more and more people are starting to see that. One of my close dear friends, Professor J.J. Hertak's in the country at the moment. He's talking in Bath this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm going out to meet him tomorrow. He's one of the literally at the forefront of science at the moment. And even he is saying now things like remote viewing are scientifically proven. The existence of extraterrestrials are actually scientifically proven. You know, there are so many things now that science is starting to stand up and say, okay, we were wrong.
Absolutely. There is a breakthrough.
There's a time coming now where things are going to change dramatically, I'm sure.
Well, I think the young physicists now are the magicians. Mm. I mean, they're working with the sort of things that we've been talking about for years. Mm. And they're acknowledging that these things are for real. Mm. And that they have to be explained. But what they don't have to be is put into a little box and say, oh, that's so-and-so, put it in the pigeonhole and that's it. Mm. All the anomalies in their work have got to be explained. These are the important ones, the mavericks, the things that don't conform to the graph and all that sort of thing. The little spot up there, say, oh, that must have been a wrong reading. It's not. Yeah, these are the important ones, the mavericks.
There's a lot of mediums and spiritualists who have said for a long, long time that the elders, the ancestors, are so important to the work that we do.
Absolutely.
Now, that they tend to quote the Red Indians, but the Maoris are just as important, aren't they? Tell us how the Maoris have changed your thinking.
Well, the Maori, it wasn't Maoris, actually. It was the Waitaha, the people who lived for 1,000 years before the Maori. But the academic acceptance now is that they didn't exist. Despite of all the artifacts and all the legends and all the traditions and all the songs and all the things that have detailed the entire history of a people who lived in New Zealand for 1,000 years in harmony with each other, in harmony with the earth, who didn't know what war was. And then, of course, when the Maori came in, not all Maori are bad, but and a particularly aggressive Maori came in, they are now having the dichotomy of having to accept that they came in and murdered their ancestors and their ancestor worshippers. And this is a big problem. It's a big problem. But it's being resolved. There are very, very well-educated, erudite Maori who are beginning to get out level playing field. They're always the people on both sides who create problems. But you see, New Zealand has all the problems the world has. They have a racial problem. They have not enough people to support their economy. They have a total of 4.5 million people in a country the size of the UK. That's why it's so perfect. And they have the problem of providing the funds to keep the infrastructure going.
Mm, of course. Now, where do you think your work's going to take you next?
It's going to take me home for a sleep.
Well, I had 2 hours sleep last night, so I can relate to that.
No, I would like to recoup a little bit. I do think that I've got an awful lot to learn. You see, the elders, when they said, they said to me quite clearly through somebody else, actually, there are 7 levels of understanding in this place that I was talking about, and you have reached the second. And that cuts you down to size for a start. Yeah. So I'm really intrigued about the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, which is available. The energy the knowledge is available if you can get yourself tuned into that at that particular place. So I would love to go back there, yeah.
Tell us a little about the books you've got out at the moment.
The original one was The Son of the Serpent. That became a sort of a cult winner, if you like. Anyway, we're not talking about bestsellers here, but it was a good-selling book, and it raised a lot of new questions with people and changed some people's lives, actually. And then we wrote The Dance of the Dragon, which was the one about the journey down through Europe. And then I wrote the definitive wee book on dowsing, because it was necessary to get the mystery out of it and make it quite ordinary. And then I wrote a book called It's Not Too Late, which... is still how I feel. It's not too late for us to change enough to save the planet, if you like. And it's really some things that we can do to get towards that. And the one In Search of the Southern Serpent was my search, actually, for something deeper than I had hit before. And patently, the experience in New Zealand got me into that place. But I'm only at the beginning of the journey.
Okay, on the actual intelligence issue, again, during your speech, you mentioned that there was a shown intelligence in the way that these patterns are created and this energy manifests. Where do you think that intelligence comes from?
Well, I think it's a connection with the universal creator, if you like, at a very, very low level. Like, I talk about my relationship with the management, which I only had because I died and met them and came back again. And they're sort of the next level up to us, if you like. And there are so many different levels up, but they are all part of the ultimate creator. I mean, the cosmic, in a cosmic sense, there is intelligence. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be in our form, it can be in any form.
Yeah, I agree.
This is why I go for the whole thing about us not being... I mean, just look out on a starry night and look at it and say, are we the only... What nonsense, yeah, what arrogance!
No, I agree with that. Now, a lot of current thinking, especially we referred earlier to J.J. Hertak, a lot of current thinking alongside Hertak is that we are part of a line of creation from autoterrestrial through extraterrestrial down to where we are now. Mm. Reincarnation is probably a large part of this. How do you think somebody that's not done it before can start to communicate with this outer consciousness and this earth energy?
I think we have to move out of our five senses. I mean, I was talking about perceptions being ruled by teachers and tutors and family and social setups and all sorts of things like that. And our thoughts have been guided with the knowledge of the five senses. Now, we have to get out of that. We have to understand that there are not just five, there are 6, 7, 19,000 other senses that are available, but we couldn't handle them. I mean, the first thing that happens when you get... remote viewing is that the military take it over and say, how do we use this as a weapon? Mm, exactly. Now, if there is an intelligence around there, they'll say, don't give them any more, this species, because they are so aggressive. And, you know, we will not, until we get into the sort of sense that begins to understand that, yes, there is a huge amount of knowledge that we don't have, but we mustn't look at it as how do we make a fast buck out of it.
Right. Now, is there a website people can find out more about you on, Hamish?
Yeah, it's www.hamishmiller.co.uk.
Hamishmiller.co.uk. Hamish, thank you very much indeed for
pleasure,
taking part
pleasure
today.
Pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely fascinated by your lecture, and I would recommend any of my listeners, if you get the chance to see Hamish, do go along and see him. And we hope that we can have you back as a guest on the show sometime in the future, Hamish.
Thank you very much. I'd love to.
Cheers.